from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 90, recorded March the 9th, 2025, brought to you by Factor. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell. And with me is the injury expert himself, back on the show. It's Will Carroll. Hi, Will.
How's it going?
Going good. It's we were both saying before the show started, so we're dragging. There's a time change. I went on vacation. Will just came back from the Sloan Sports Conference in Boston. We're doing this episode late because we couldn't record it earlier than this for all of those travel reasons. So we're here and we're gonna power through. We're gonna rally, as my wife says. Rally.
It is not good. It's gonna be information focused rather than energy focused. Because no matter how many of those Cokes you drink, caffeine can only do so much.
Only so much. It's true.
Exactly.
I'm coming off of a sugar high too, because I was just curling, and we get donuts afterward. It's a Sunday brunch league.
Yeah.
But I'm also tired because I just was sweeping a lot of things on ice. It's true. I do curling. I am an Olympic athlete.
That's the best. I'm going to visit you just to do that with you.
The weakest sense. Come on out to the Bay Area. I'll show you a good curling time.
We're hoping to sign a Bay Area team very, very soon. So I may nice. Indeed do that.
Very nice.
Can I tell you one quick Sloan story, please, before we get going?
Please.
So me and my co-founder from my other company, Intangible, we were there to present, and we also had a booth, and all the people were walking by. And at one point, I recognized a gentleman, and I said, Mr. James, and it was Bill James.
Bill James.
One of the rooms is named after Bill James, and if you're any sort of sports fan, you know who that is. And he turned and he goes, "Oh, Will Carroll, hi," and came over, shook my hand. We talked for a bit. We got a picture. And as he walked away, my co-founder was like, "He knew who you were."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good." I had that happen in the fall, I want to say, at the iPhone event. I was standing with a group of people chatting, and John Ternus, who is their head of hardware, who is rumored to be one of the serious candidates to be Tim Cook's replacement as CEO of Apple, walked up and he said hello. And I had that moment of like, does John Ternus know who I am? Does he know who I am? And he was like, I was standing next to John Gruber. He's like, "Hi, John, how you doing?" They told a little story about how John Gruber noticed him walking down his street from his window of his house, and was like, "What? Why is that John Ternus?" And went down and said hello. And then he turned to me and he says, "Hi, Jason." And I was like, okay, possible future CEO of Apple. Pick me out of a lineup. I like it. Dang. I like it. It's not quite Bill James, but it is a moment. That is, I had that moment at San Diego Comic-Con where I told Andy Runton, the author of the Owly books, that my kids loved his books, and my wife, who's a children's librarian, loved his books. And he said, "I know who you are, Jason," because he was a podcast listener and Macworld reader. And that was a pretty amazing moment, too.
You're a pretty big deal. I recognized you when we met in Indianapolis.
We are famous in a limited space, which is, I think, really nice. That's the classic Richard Kind bit, which is, you know, be a little tiny bit famous, but not actually famous, or your life is ruined. So anyway, that's awesome. Bill James. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he started it all from the Bean Factory with his just jotting things down in a notebook. And he started the kind of analytics revolution.
Exactly.
Great story.
Exactly. Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit more about Sloan later, but I wanted to, this episode, obviously there's going to be a little more sports corner because that's what I like to do when I talk to Will. The big story is I have it in here as divorce, but I kind of want to call it the separation because I'm not sure it's permanent, but it is the separation of MLB and ESPN, that there was an opt-out in ESPN's contract with Major League Baseball, and they opted. So, and there are lots of things swirling around here, right? They had these pilot deals that they felt were appreciably different than what the ESPN relationship was with Apple TV for their Friday Night Baseball, which was it's an exclusive game, but it's not an exclusive time window. So it's, you know, your local team might be on Friday Night Baseball a couple of times and you have to watch those on Apple TV Plus, but all the other games proceed as normal and there's no black. It's not like Sunday Night Baseball. And then the Sunday morning game that was originally on Peacock, and then when NBC dropped, they sold it to Roku for a song. And ESPN basically pointed at those two things and said, they're not paying a fraction of what we're paying for this deal. We have a bad deal and we want to renegotiate it. And now Rob Manfred, on the other hand, the commissioner of baseball, thought he had leverage over them because he's like, I got other interested bidders. There are other fish in the sea, ESPN. It's not just about you. And so they were at an impasse and ESPN announced, well, what happened is ESPN said, we're opting out, at which point Major League Baseball pre-announced that they were moving on and that there were other fish in the sea and they were gonna and ESPN's just a declining brand anyway because it's on cable and who cares. And this is a kind of a wild story because on some level I feel like they are a great match in terms of ESPN getting content in the summer when there's not a lot else going on and baseball having the worldwide leader in sports and a very powerful brand with their showcase game on Sunday night for the last, you know, couple of decades. Yeah. And yet it has come to this. Well, it's kind of amazing.
It has. And somebody I was talking to at Sloan said to me, is it, 'cause I said something very similar. I was like, we're so used to it. Everybody's used to ESPN having baseball, being where you go for baseball. And they said, is that because you're used to it or is that because it's a good fit? And I was like, oh, wait a second. And so this is curious to me in a lot of ways. I think the fact that both of them are saying, you know, nice mutual things in press releases is nice, but there is very clearly people talking behind the scenes that, no, we can do better. I don't think they're blowing smoke about there being other bidders. Is it going to be $550 million? I don't think so. I think the fact that it's come out that they're talking about rolling up their own rights and trying to do what MLS has done.
Right.
I think that's intriguing, but going to be expensive. We've talked about that before. I think that Netflix, Amazon, Apple, I don't know if Paramount is even going to exist. I don't know what Peacock is going to do. We've seen Fox Sports jump into racing pretty hardcore. What else do they have? There are possible bidders out there.
Fox is the existing relationship, and they have done, if there's anything I think that has been innovative on, I mean, I think the Friday Night Baseball has been an interesting experimentation thing for Apple and MLB, but I wanted to point out the event games that Fox has found some great success with in the summer. In addition to the All-Star game, doing the Rickwood Field game or the Fields of Dreams game, and that by all accounts, Fox and Major League Baseball really like that idea of creating these kind of special showcase games in the summer, and they get good ratings. And it's in a 162 game season, it's very hard to have. Even Sunday Night Baseball is still just a one of 162. You can't be Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. But there's the Fox relationship, but Fox is already paying them for all of this stuff. And there's the TBS relationship, but TBS is already paying them. So that's the question, is like, is there another kind of, because the problem is that you could roll up all these rights and find a streamer and get, like, you know, you subscribe and you get all the games, including your local games. You could maybe sell that off to a streamer instead of doing a direct to consumer kind of thing. But like, that doesn't feel the same to me as having some kind of, you know, an additional platform or spotlight in the long, long baseball season to lift things up and highlight things and give you something to look at and add a little terrain to what is otherwise a really flat, flat in a good way. I love baseball. It's my favorite sport, but it's such a long haul and all the games are basically the same, which is why Sunday Night Baseball ends up doing Yankees Red Sox all the time, as they're trying to make something out of nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is it is a frighteningly local sport still, you know, even if, you know, there are so many people who are Dallas Cowboys fans or San Francisco 49ers fans because they grew up and those are the teams that were winning Super Bowls. And so even if you grew up in, you know, I don't know, Pensacola, Florida, then, you know, they don't have a team, they don't have one close. Are you a New Orleans fan? You know, it's not as territorial. And it used to be people who grew up Yankees fans. My father grew up a Yankees fan because that there was game of the week and that was it. And yeah. It was usually the Yankees or the Dodgers. So it's gotten back to that. I think it's the local rights that are the key, because you can't do the big sort of package that they need to do without rolling up those local rights and getting rid of the blackout. The blackout is the death knell for virtually, it just stinks. But if they could get rid of that, and they could if they held all the rights, that's the one to me. It's the other side that I'm completely confused about. What the heck is ESPN doing? I get they think they can save some money, but they've got Flagship coming. Mm. Everybody knows it. Mm-hmm. I heard people, I did not hear one person, including a couple of people from ESPN that I spoke to, not give a very good explanation of what it was. I think the ESPN people were kind of avoiding the question.
Sure.
Because they don't want to be seen as leakers. Even in off the record, you know, standing at a bar conversations. It's one of those things where, what the heck is Flagship? I've heard people describe it as ESPN++. I've heard it described as kind of a really, really fancy Apple Sports. You know, Apple Sports is so cool because it's so stupidly simple. But if you tried to build content around that, where you could basically click through the score to every event, no matter where it was, is that even ESPN? The other one that I think is really going to tell us more about ESPN than anything else is there are a lot of rumors that the ESPN bet relationship has gone very, very sour. It is not nearly as profitable for Penn Entertainment, which is the back end. Penn famously dumped Barstool to go to ESPN,
right,
which seems like a great trade, but apparently it wasn't. ESPN has always danced around gambling because of the Disney relationship. They were late to get in on Daily Fantasy, even though there was gobs of money. Gambling is obviously a big deal, but they just haven't fully committed to it, and it's apparently not profitable, or not profitable enough for what they're right, paying for the licensing fees. So if that goes sour, that was where I thought Flagship was going to be able to go.
Right.
If you integrate with betting, if you figure out the latency, which is a whole other discussion. But if Flagship doesn't have all the content, or it doesn't have the profitability of a betting house, and I think they could very easily go and get with one of the bigger ones. I'm just confused. I'm absolutely confused by everything ESPN has done in the last week.
Yeah, that's the part that gets me too, is the idea that, okay, I understand that they wanted a better deal, and that a lot of the reports I'm reading are saying the industry kind of agrees that what ESPN was paying for its Major League Baseball deal is probably not a good deal. And if you're Rob Manfred, I also understand the other side of it, which is, well, if you don't give us our money, we'll find somebody else who will give us our money. If you've got somebody, right? That's the big question, is if you've got somebody. But it is surprising. This is why all these secondary stories that are like, oh, no, there's still, feelers are still out and they're still open to talking and all of that. I feel like that's because this is such a weird story that ESPN is about to launch a product that is critical for them, for their future. It defines that brand going forward, and they need content. And you know who has all the content is baseball. There are so many baseball games. There's so much content. They would seem like such natural partners. And to have... So I understand all the pieces here. I just don't understand. Maybe it's personal. Maybe it really ends up being that Rob Manfred just wants to see what else is out there. And that if ESPN won't just re-up their deal, which they won't, that he's going to take a look around, right? It's like, I love being here, but I want to explore free agency, right? Like, and that's not unreasonable. But for him to do that. But if I mean ESPN, how important is that relationship? You've hurt that relationship, possibly severed it, at a moment where you actually are probably going to come back to them and say, we really want to be your partner?
I don't think they will.
You don't think so?
I don't think they will. No, I think there's a couple things. First off, they're spending money on other things.
Sure.
And a lot of people were talking about first, I know we're going to talk about the Stephen A. deal, but between that, some other personnel deals they'll have to make soon, or decisions on, I guess. And then the big one that's kind of looming over everything is Project Rudy. And we've talked about this before. It's not even defined to exist yet, but everybody knows it does. So just quickly, the Project Rudy is the code name for like the Super League of college athletics, where basically the Big Ten and the SEC will break off, dump a couple people, and have a Super League. And because who needs anybody else?
Right.
If they want to pick off a couple people from the old Pac-12 or the, it basically, if you want to take the 40 or 50 best teams, put them together and sell a big rights package, that would be big.
Yeah.
That would be, short of the NFL or the NBA, that would be the easy number three. And a lot of people think ESPN has to hold some powder back to fight with everybody else for what that would be, because the big key to that is it severs all the other relationships.
Right.
You know, the Big Ten deal, the Big Ten still exists. You still got a deal, much in the same way that Pac-12 did, with what, two teams, and now they're bringing some back in. But we would just step out of it. Go ahead and sue us. We're going to do this and make money. So I just think, with all the problems baseball has, not having the local rights, having two teams that are homeless, having almost an assured lockout, I found it very interesting that ESPN sought out Tony Clark to talk about a salary cap, knowing what his response would be. Tony's the head of the Major League Baseball Players Association. And yes, there's going to be a lot of talk about a salary cap, but I just think too many weird things are happening to ESPN right now.
It's true. And this is, what a time to launch whatever flagship is going to be, right? Because Jimmy Pitaro, you know, it's a defining moment for that brand, for him as an executive at Disney. But the truth is, and I have seen this in a bunch of places, there are, in the truest sense of classic ESPN, if you and I remember back in the day, at the early days, there's content out there that you can either make it or you can get it fairly cheap, and it will fill. Mm-hmm. I mean, in many ways, that is what ESPN Plus already has, is a huge volume of that content. And, you know, I don't think Major League Baseball is a must have for them. It's just interesting that this is the moment when they choose to sort of step away. I don't know. I still feel like in the end, they would probably be happy to pay half of what they were paying. But Rob Manfred doesn't believe that the deal is worth that. I think the big problem, you're right, baseball's a local sport. So ESPN's playoff package is poor. It's not very good. It's like some wild card games. I would be unhappy with that if I were ESPN. And, you know, if you stay outside and you just look at the locals, like, it's so driven by locals. So that's fine. The challenge for Major League Baseball is they do want visibility that isn't your local team only, and only on a streaming service that you pay for, or they are basically saying, unless you care about baseball, you're never going to see baseball. And that's where ESPN comes in. That's where Fox comes in. That's where TBS comes in.
Yeah. The worry would be that, you know, when ESPN lost the NHL,
it disappeared, right?
You just never vanished saw it.
From you reality.
Absolutely never saw it. Is the same thing going to happen in baseball? The other thing on Rob is that, you know, can Rob go back to the owners and say, oh, we got cut in half? That's not going to go too well. His contract isn't going that long. He wants to get baseball through the next CBA. He's got that deal coming up. Everybody who we thought might be the candidate, he says he's not going to take another contract. Everybody who we thought was a candidate to replace him is gone now. So, you know, it's like one of those old, who was it? Was it the Persians that the brothers would fight to the death to succeed? It wasn't just the oldest one. I'm forgetting my history podcast, but, it's a weird situation for baseball. It's a weirder situation for MLB.
Yeah.
Or ESPN, excuse me.
Yeah. It's, well, okay. So segueing from that, you mentioned him. I wanted to ask you, as somebody in the know about sports stuff and sports media, what you think of the fact that in this time when there are rights that are skyrocketing, there's decisions that every company has to make, MLB rights at ESPN, NBA rights going away from Warner Brothers Discovery, lots of questions about that, lots of honestly, ESPN's classic shoulder programming getting downgraded and downgraded and downgraded and things getting canceled and people losing their jobs. But Stephen A. Smith got a 5-year, $100 million contract to just talk about sports. And then he can also do whatever else he wants, wherever, non-exclusively, which is also pretty wild. So what is that? What is paying some key personalities tell us about what ESPN thinks its future is?
Yeah, that's the really interesting thing. Obviously, the thing that doesn't make sense to me is, where does he fit in Flagship? How much are they actually committed to Flagship? If they've got to pay, you know, functionally $20 million a year, there's a couple opt-outs in there, I've been told, and that Stephen A. has some opt-outs because he's pretending he's going to be the next Trump. It's a situation where, I worked there briefly many years ago, so I can't pretend to have any insider knowledge. But what they did back then is probably very similar to what they do now. They do a lot of focus groups. They know their ratings. They know who's watching. They know their customers better than anyone. And they thought it was worth it. I think they truly believe that. And the thing that's always been interesting to me is that while I know that is true, they can create people. Think how many people have come through there and left and been replaced, and you don't blink. You know, we still talk about Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann. We still talk about Craig Kilborn and all the people that have done SportsCenter or done other shows. But those go on. I mean, you can sometimes you lose a closer, and then you just build another one from some, Luke Weaver.
I was going to say, don't sign an expensive closer and don't draft a star running back, because although you will find stars in that, you can also just find them off of the pile and make them stars. That's a classic sports thing. And I think that that's a really great point. I guess the question is, are there some people that it's worth kind of hanging a whole ecosystem off of? And I mean, the Pat McAfee is a good example, where what a random kind of person, but like he's built up a following, and they've got that whole virtuous cycle happening with the YouTube show and the ESPN show. And it all kind of like rattles around through social media and YouTube, and ESPN is a part of it. And you create kind of like a happening. And, you know, it makes me wonder if the future of ESPN is literally live sports, live sporting events, and a small number of personalities, and that's it.
Yeah, but McAfee is a great example. I mean, McAfee got drunk, fell in the canal here in Indianapolis, got arrested, and suddenly he got famous. Then a couple things happened. We realized he was really smart. He talked really well. He was really good at what he did. A friend of mine does a celebrity comedy show, and McAfee killed. Just absolutely killed. He could do stand up to, and basically does. But in the same way, you basically found Pat McAfee in the most random way, and he built his following up. Obviously, he'd done things before ESPN latched onto it. There's more out there. There are a lot of great sports podcasts. There's a lot of great young sports people that you could really lock in on. But hey, Disney likes stars. I'm going to question again. I don't know what ESPN is doing. I have to believe somebody there figured out how much he's worth, and this deal makes sense. But they've got Mike Greenberg's contract coming up. They've got a lot of the SportsCenter people coming up. They're doing the special Disney SportsCenter, which again makes no sense for Flagship. All these different personnel decisions, including their showcase of Monday Night Football. Joe Buck is actually dipping his toe back in baseball.
Yeah. So one game, he says, one game.
Bull. I think he's worried they're not going to re-sign him and Troy Aikman. I think there's a legitimate question about whether the ridiculously large check, more power to him. I'm not knocking it, but I just can't imagine how some of the deals that these Tom Brady's deal can't possibly pay off. Cannot possibly. But they wanted those guys and they had to pay for it. So I wonder whether some of those top end deals aren't going to make it for precisely that reason. Does First Take work for the TikTok generation? Maybe. Are you just hanging on to the people? Are people going to watch a 3-hour show on, Flagship, wherever that lives? About the only other thing that works other than sports is morning shows. I mean, Michael Strahan is getting an obscene amount of money to do a morning show on one network and then go and do football on the other network. Right. Tim Tebow is on like once a week, I'm told. I'm not up at that hour, and I'm certainly not watching Tim. But he's getting an obscene amount of money. And all those morning people, I mean, when Hoda left, look at the number that those people make.
Right. But Hoda left. I can't believe we're talking about Hoda now. Hoda left in part because they weren't going to pay her what they were paying her. Right. Like that's the thing that we are seeing on the news side that I believe will happen on the sports side, which is that thing where you've got a lot of people who are saying, oh, I'm cutting back or I'm leaving. And it turns out one of the reasons is they used to get paid $500,000 and now they're only going to get paid $300,000. And they're like, no, I'm just going to leave or I'm going to cut back. And you get, you know, the $5 million deal. Sorry, I lowballed these stars. The $5 million a year deal becomes the $2 million a year deal. Mm-hmm. And you either swallow it and accept it or you've got too much pride and you just walk away. But you're walking away from $2 million. And we've seen that's why all the anchors turned over and all the news anchors like Nora O'Donnell and Lester Holt are being replaced with. It's a downstream, but we're talking about broadcast a little bit. They all go together. Right. It is a change in the economy of television where those expensive personalities, like you said, you know, you can make a news anchor by plopping a good person on the news desk every night and you can make a star and they're way cheaper. It's like signing an expensive free agent versus doing player development.
Absolutely. I mean, was Jenna Bush expected to become a big star? I mean, she wasn't.
You run her out there and see what happens.
And yeah. Is Scarlett Johansson going to be the next person? I don't know. But it's crazy. But I'm not knocking Steven for getting his money. Get that money, everybody. But I don't get it personally.
Well, this is a fundamental thing. This is a thing that I think Julia and I touched on occasionally. But I think it's something that fascinates her. And I'm curious about it, too, which is the internet has really allowed individual creators to come to the fore, whether you're Mr. Beast or something like that, or whether you're Pat McAfee. I mean, you know, he had a following and he was an NFL player, but like he was able to use social media to kind of build up his own brand. Yep. And then ESPN came to him and said, we would like to be a part of the virtuous ecosystem of Pat McAfee and integrate you into our other stuff. And you'll be on College Game Day and this and that. Plus we'll show your thing. So this is, I think, one of the fundamental interesting questions about where media goes next is ESPN, SportsCenter. These are brands. ESPN Flagship. The idea there is future of sports on TV. You go to Flagship. It's a big deal. And that is huge brand. And we, like we've been saying, kind of a star maker in some ways, because you can make the brand makes the people a star. But the other side of it is people who can just be stars. And then and what happens is the brand more important? Like Pat McAfee can't buy rights to the NFL, right? Like this is the challenge. So how do you, the big brands have the money, but the personalities are kind of emerging elsewhere. How do you balance trying to develop your own farm system of which the fewer shows you've got, the less talent you could put on the air versus letting the internet kind of sort it out and then identifying the stars from there and bringing them on board?
I think shows like First Take, I mean, I got on when ESPN hired me, it was because I'd done Cold Pizza, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
On another ESPN too.
Morning, ESPN morning show or NFL Network morning
original show.
I don't know if I
got it. Yeah, it was all sports. And I was on there a couple times. And that was, they were like, you're cool pizza, good enough right. on TV to put you on.
Yep.
So they could do that. But I think it's a lot like the NFL and college sports. Why don't you have a minor league? Because they have college football. Somebody else does it for them.
Yeah.
Find those good people, put them on in a small role, and see who bubbles up. I think that makes a ton of sense. You know, if you could have found Pat McAfee early, you wouldn't have to pay him, you know, nine figures.
It's true. And for Stephen A. Smith, I guess, you know, that's a calculation that is above our pay grades, which is yeah. it worth keeping that star? Because what's he going to go? What's he going to do? And where's he going to go? And I think in reality, who do we have to replace him? And if you're feeling a little bit weak, a little bit uncertain about the future, you pay mm-hmm. him for 5 years, maybe, while you figure out who's next, and then you move on. And that's a decision that we, you know, Disney has. Yeah. Disney can afford to make that decision and play it out.
Oh, if they yeah, want to. They've got it's all the money. It's a rounding error for them.
You mentioned
Flagship is not.
Yeah, you mentioned SC Plus, which is a new daily sports center on Disney Plus. It is a fast. It's basically the top 10 plays.
But is it new guys? It's new guys on there, right?
I don't know. I don't know if it's new anchors or not.
I didn't recognize them. Hmm. I admit that I don't watch SportsCenter.
Deep down in the bench at SportsCenter.
But I thought, here's somebody off the bench. You're putting them in a very high profile thing. You know, I haven't gotten a chance to see the show. But just the idea that they're doing that ahead of Flagship, again, why? I don't get
right.
it.
Right. Wouldn't that be, you know, a great feature of Flagship to have the drop you in and give you what's going on?
If they're practicing
now.
It, if they're wanting to get people used yeah. to it, if they're wanting to get reps for it, yeah, absolutely makes
and
sense.
Getting ESPN branded content in front of people on Disney Plus is probably part of the strategy there too, just to get everybody yeah. comfortable with the idea that everything goes. I was watching Shoresy, by the way. I should mm-hmm. make that my TV recommendation, actually.
Love that show.
A delightful show on Hulu. But I opened it up, and it's, you know, through the Disney Plus app. I'm mm-hmm. watching it. And, like, that show is kind of filthy. And it's in Disney
not
Plus.
Not for the kids.
And it's in Disney Plus. And I laughed. But that, you know, that's the whole point now of doing this, is they want it to be everything. And that yeah. means everything. So,
well, see, I mean, I still think they brand that as Hulu, though it's right
they
there.
They do. It says it's with your yeah. Hulu subscription, but you can watch it in the Disney Plus app. And that's the idea, is like, they just want people to be as comfortable with the idea that Disney Plus encompasses yeah. Hulu and ESPN. Yeah, you have to pay more, but like, it encompasses those brands too.
I guarantee you that when they roll out Flagship, the first thing they're going to do is show a ton of it on Disney Plus
totally.
And, you know, try to hook it into the bundle.
Yeah, I would be surprised if we don't. Yeah, that you would. We will also see. Here's a prediction I'll make, which is you will also see them selectively promoting more content from ESPN to Disney Plus subscribers. Right. The idea that, mm-hmm. oh, well, I don't pay for Flagship, but you're going to get Peyton. You get the Manning cast, and it'll end with a banner that says Manning cast live right now. Watch. Yep. Watch a football game with Peyton Manning right now. And if you want to get everything, then you have to get Flagship. And starting to push some more of that content in as a way to entice Disney Plus subscribers to add on to get the full-on thing. I think, because Disney Plus is that app is super powerful. They've spent a lot of money the first 5 years of its existence mm-hmm. or whatever. They spent a huge amount of money on Star Wars shows and Marvel shows and things like that to get people into that app. And now that they've got them there, they can leverage it for this other stuff.
Yeah. And mentioning the Mannings and the Manning cast, if you haven't noticed, Omaha Productions, which is the Mannings production company, they've hired a lot of really good people, including Jamie Horowitz, who ran FS1 or Fox Sports back then. He was at ESPN for a long time, and they're doing stuff. They've done stuff on Netflix. They've done stuff with Fox. They've done stuff all over the place. Mm-hmm. If they don't pay the Mannings, and it's a fairly sweetheart deal, but it's not Stephen A. Smith money. I'm telling you, they're going to want Stephen A. money.
Yeah.
And that renegotiation is coming up soon.
Okay, let me take a little break from Downstream and tell you about our sponsor. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. You might be feeling it's time to optimize your nutrition. If that's you, Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. They are dietitian approved. They're ready to heat and eat in as little as 2 minutes, so you can feel right and feel great no matter what life throws at you. Oh, the empty refrigerator. It mocks me. Factor solves this problem. It arrives fresh, and fully prepared. It's perfect for any active or busy lifestyle. There are Factor Keto meals. They can help you meet weight loss goals. They conducted a randomized controlled clinical trial with the Factor Keto product. It's worth noting results will vary depending on diet and exercise, but what an interesting idea. But that's not all. They've got 40 different options, over 8 different dietary preferences on the menu every single week. It's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. You can choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and more, all as add-ons to the existing Factor. They're sending you a box. They can put other stuff in that box. Reach your goals this year with ingredients you trust and convenience that cannot be beat. I get Factor meals sent to me. My wife steals them and takes them to work because they're so good. But more than that, my mom lives alone, doesn't really want to cook for herself. She's been losing weight. It's been worrying us. And we said, Mom, we're going to get you Factor. And I pick the meals for her. They show up at her door. She puts them in the fridge. She eats them and she likes them. And she's telling me like, oh, get me more of the salmon. The salmon is really good. It's great. I don't eat salmon, but like she is just loving that salmon. So put it in the package. Anything. I want her to have protein. And she's alone. You know, she doesn't want to cook a big meal. Factor. These are fresh meals, but it's 2 minutes out of the microwave and it's ready to go. There's a secret. Like they figured it out. They figured out how to make microwave food not taste lousy. And it really is good. That's why my wife keeps stealing my Factor meals and taking them to work with her. You can eat smart with Factor too. And here's how. You get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and you use the code FACTORPODCAST and you'll get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST, FACTORPODCAST. You're listening to one now. Factormeals.com/factorpodcast. You'll get 50% off free shipping on your first box. Woo! Thank you to Factor for supporting Downstream and all of Relay. Also tangentially related to we're talking about baseball rights, we should talk about the Washington Nationals, Baltimore Orioles, Mid-Atlantic Sports Network deal. So this is an RSN in the Mid-Atlantic region, the Baltimore-Washington region. And when the Nationals moved from Montreal into what was perceived as being Baltimore's market, even though, you know, it is a totally different city, Washington, D.C., there was and their owner was Peter Angelos, who was an attorney. They made a deal, and the deal was that Peter Angelos's regional sports network, MASN, would get the rights to the Nationals broadcasts. And it was not a great deal for the Nationals, but they needed to get into that market, and baseball needed them out of Montreal and into Washington, D.C. Anyway, there's a long way of saying Peter Angelos he died last year. Everybody's moved on. It's different players now. And they have come to an agreement as a part of all of the RSN shenanigans that we've talked about on this podcast, that finally the moment has come. The Nationals are being allowed to, they'll broadcast on MASN for one more year, at which point they get amazingly, they'll finally have control of their own TV rights, which is just hard to believe that it was just kind of not a thing they could do. And it's a hugely important part of their business, but they will get it back for next season, for 2026. And on one level, it could be musical chairs. Ted Leonsis, the AOL billionaire who owns the Wizards and the Capitals?
Wizards and Capitals, also owns the Mystics in the WNBA.
Right.
And some other projects. He doesn't own the DC United. He owns a lot. Billionaires own a lot of things.
Oh, they do. That is a truism.
So I don't remember. But remember that the Nationals have been for sale for a number of years.
Yes.
They have not hit the price that the Lerner family wants. Also, billionaires that own a lot of things, mostly real estate.
They didn't get to be billionaires by taking cheap deals on selling things.
Yeah, but the problem is when the Mets sold for $4 billion, including the RSN rights, which I think are about to move. I think that everybody else wanted that. I know that Artie Moreno, who owns the Angels, walked away from a deal that was a really good deal. It wasn't $4 billion, but billion was in it. And when you think how much he bought that from Disney, to bring it full circle, right now we've got three teams for sale. I mean, flat out for sale. And there's another couple that could probably be bought. Add in the Cleveland Guardians. I forget which Dolan passed away, Charles. And that has already been in the process of being sold to Harris Blitzer, who owns the Sixers, the Devils, and the Washington Commanders. Mm-hmm. The one thing that Ted Leonsis doesn't own. They, I think, own 40% of the Guardians. I think it's 2026 when they would take control. But now apparently they're accelerating that, and they might just, the Dolans might get out of it.
There's a lot of baseball movement happening right now. And so on one level, it's like, oh, Ted Leonsis has built the sports empire, especially in DC, and he built his own RSN, which is monumental.
Yeah.
Which would be like
basically just his teams.
It's just his teams. But that would be a place, a Washington themed RSN that the Nationals could go to if they wanted to under a new deal. And Rob Manfred wants to make sure that everything is also available over the top as a streaming thing. So it's not blacked out. And it's like all of that is there. But in our show notes, you made the point that I was actually going to ask you about and make to you, which is the other part of this is that Ted Leonsis, I think, has been wanting to buy the Nationals. And it hasn't happened yet. And does this grease the skids to say, well, now you're not just buying the team. You actually will have the rights. You could put them on your own RSN if you wanted to. It would be therefore that much extra virtuosity in the circle that you don't have to make an RSN. You already have one. And it makes it the Nationals a little less encumbered as a part of that. So that's part of the question, too.
Is he going to up his offer because it now includes the rights? Or, are the rights enough? Now does he not want to buy it? I think they're going to end up having to sell because there's too many taxes coming. And I think a lot of these team ownership deals are driven by two things. You have to do the deal to make sure you don't have to pay the estate taxes. And Trump has talked openly about wanting to do away with franchise amortization. Which is, get this, people, franchise owners can write off that $1 billion purchase over 15 years and basically pay nothing.
Nice.
Which is a nice deal when you consider some of these franchises, like my favorite one is the Las Vegas Raiders can't sell a significant amount. Because that franchise is valued at the original purchase price for tax purposes of $10,000. Al Davis borrowed money from his mother-in-law to purchase the franchise, moved it around a number of times. The NFL has grown and grown and grown, but it's still
in the family.
Technically appraised. Yeah, it's still under team control, or family control, I mean. It's nuts how much some of these things have gone up, and they get to write it off to boot.
Amazing. Also talking about sports streaming, another little news story that I wanted to mention. Pete Distad, who was the guy at Apple for a while, who was working on sports stuff there, and then he went to Venue. Remember Venue? Venue was going to be a joint venture.
Nobody remembers Venue.
Downstream listeners remember Venue.
Yes.
It was going to be a joint venture to do sports between Fox and WBD and Disney, and then they pulled the plug on it, and because Flagship is coming and because it was probably anti-competitive because they were not selling those packages to anybody else. And they're like, fine, you can make a skinny sports bundle. We don't care anymore. But anyway, so that company didn't happen, but he was the one who was running that company until it got nuked.
Mm-hmm.
He has gone to Fox. And this is interesting because Lachlan Murdoch has said they're working on a Fox Sports streamer app. And this is interesting because Fox Sports, obviously, they have Fox Nation, which is really a Fox News indexed product. But they have said they are the one, like if we talk about the NFL, you can watch NBC games on Peacock. You can watch CBS games on Paramount Plus. You can watch ESPN games, maybe, you know, on Flagship. Fox, you can't. You just can't watch it. Unless Fox wants you to see it, like for the Super Bowl, you have to have a local channel for those games. And it is a product that some things are on the Fox Sports app, but again, you're doing usually a cable authentication for that sort of thing. Anyway, it is like the last streaming sports piece to drop in the US. And they've said that they're going to do something. Although a lot of people thought, and I've seen some reporting this week that says a lot of people thought that they would probably also make a deal with ESPN to resell it through Flagship. That seems to not be happening because they seem to want to kind of go ahead and build their own thing. Pete Distad is the guy that they did it. I actually kind of wonder if Fox might have taken a bunch of the pieces of Venue when it all fell apart, because somebody probably said, who wants this intellectual property and who wants these programmers and all of that? And it's like, oh, yeah, we'll take them over here at Fox.
I think that's I think you're exactly right. That's what I think they're doing. I'm curious about it because, you know, there had been hints that they were going to use Tubi that way. You know, they had the Super Bowl on Tubi. You know, was that going to turn into something more like, say, a YouTube TV product where there was some free stuff? You could also buy some stuff. I just don't know. And, you know, there's been obviously who's running that thing. The succession drama has been going on longer than the actual show that was not about it. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because, again, that just balkanizes the rights again. I mean, we can't figure out where NASCAR is these days because it's on 12 different networks, depending on what week. I just don't get one more streamer. It's like, I don't need it. I don't need the ones I have. I don't want more.
If I were Fox, I feel like my strategy would be, I want to have my sports available over the top. And so I'm going to build a service to do that. But if I was actually employed by them, I would change my mind. But I'm throwing it out there as a guy with a podcast. I would make part of the fundamental strategy of it. It's everywhere, right? You're on Prime Video, you want Fox Sports, you can get it. You're on Apple TV, you want Fox Sports, you can get it. You're on Flagship, ESPN, you pay extra through there. We'll cut them in for a little something. But basically, it's like anywhere you Paramount Plus, you're watching NFL games on Paramount Plus on Sundays because that's where most of them are. And the others are on Fox. It's like, make a deal with Paramount Plus where I will be an add-on for your service as well, or you'll be an add-on for my service. And just say, look, Fox spends a lot of money on college football, on the NFL, on baseball. You know, they've got some other stuff too, racing. They've got stuff and people want to see it. And let's just make it available to anyone who will give us some money. I think that would be the strategy. Would just be, you can put it anywhere and you can just be our customer. But I think the reality is that that downward pressure of being a fan of a sport, instead of a fan, I'm not a fan of Fox Sports, right? I'm not a fan of CBS Sports. I'm a fan of the NFL. I'm coming from the top down. So if I'm in a venue, sorry, bad choice of words. I mean, the one that's spelled normally. If I'm in a venue that provides me with some NFL entertainment, and then I hit the wall because they're like, oh, we flexed that game to Fox, and your Denver Broncos game isn't on CBS like you thought, like it usually is. It's on Fox this week, and you can't get that here. You know, the logical next step is you can get it here. Click here. We'll sell you a week. We'll sell you a month. We'll sell you, you whatever. Like, we'll just cut Fox's here, too. To me, that makes more sense is coming from the viewer's perspective, but also like that's where you capture them. Not to use the classic sales funnel metaphor, but that's basically what I'm talking about here is if you're in the NFL funnel, I know CBS and Fox are competitors, but they're also partners in a way, partners in NFL games on Sundays, work together, make more money. Kind of makes sense for everybody. I'm sure the NFL would love it too.
Yeah, I think so. You almost have me convinced. So I would
Pete Distad,
yeah,
call me.
I mean, no, like... yeah, no, it's that's solidly explained, sir. So, you know, with Fox, I just don't know how they make it work. They're so locked in on the old model. I mean, they get so much money from Fox News because, like ESPN, they get, you know, X number of dollars for cable.
Yeah. And you can't not have it in your package.
Yeah.
So
the NFL is still a big deal for Fox, the network.
For sure.
Yeah,
most of what they do now is literally on the network is sports and reality shows, basically. And some legacy entertainment.
Yeah.
But like that's how they do it.
There's no more Herman's Head, darn it.
And I think, yeah, Married with Children. Sure. Yeah, we're not old. I get your references, but you're right, but I think part of the strategy is, yeah, okay, we've got broadcast and that's great, but then there's all these people who just don't have broadcast. They don't want broadcast. They don't, you know, but they want the NFL. So what do we do? And, you know, eventually saying, well, yeah, but you can get YouTube TV and get the NFL. It's like, okay, but you're going to lose a lot of people who are just going to say no to that.
Yeah, not in the notes, but one thing that just came to mind. I was having a conversation with someone in the bar at Sloan, and one of the things we were talking about was Cosm. Are you familiar with this?
Cosm. The bar? No.
No. So it's this bar that's basically kind of like an 80-foot screen inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It looks like you're there, and they put their own like 8K cameras inside so that,
yes,
you know, they're specially,
yes,
placed.
I think
so
you mentioned that
like
on the podcast before. Yeah.
Yeah. It 60 Minutes did something on it just before the Super Bowl. I had wondered how they got those rights, and it came up in a conversation, and they were like, well, you know, the Endeavor has some money in them and that Fox has some money in them. And I was like, ah, so, okay. Mm. Now it makes sense. The content they've been picking, because they've done a lot of the UFC fights. They did the Super Bowl.
Makes sense.
I was like,
now,
okay. But that's a whole different thing, because going to a bar, this is sort of like the IMAX of sports bars.
Yeah.
It,
that's the elevator.
Because you're paying, you know, big. There's a ticket in addition to the food and drink you're going to purchase. Well,
it's like seeing a sporting event in a movie theater, except it's actually just a bar with a movie theater attached to it.
That's exactly what it. Yeah. And but it's not making money yet because it takes time. But they're expanding quickly. They apparently have a lot of money. Apparently, the Saudis are very interested because they have all those big events. They're launching a boxing league. So
people go to bars to watch sports, and it's usually a pretty crappy experience.
Total.
So yeah. Building a, you know, maybe there are a lot of movie theaters that could convert a lot of screens open, just put some bars
in
there.
There's a lot of open real estate to put those kind of places.
Exactly.
You know, we've got an empty mall here in downtown Indianapolis.
Sure.
That's being converted. But, you know, if you can take that old Nordstrom's or a chunk of it and turn it into the coolest sports bar in the world, that's pretty cool.
I love that. That's a fun idea. Well, I don't know what Fox is going to decide. They say they're doing something, you know, it's all still to play for. It's all still out there. I think everybody has a good idea of sort of what the end state of this is going to be, which is that broadcast is going to fade away and that everything is going to come through streaming. But, you know, if you're the NFL or Major League Baseball or the NBA or any of these companies, you don't, you could do direct to consumer and build your own product. But the truth is there are these giant media companies that find value in spreading the rights out, because then you have to buy from, they make themselves essential. And that's why it will always be the case, I think, that the NFL will spread their games out across five media companies who will pay them more than they could make on their own, because they are paying out of the dynamic of, we're going to get people and reduce churn, and we're going to keep them for other stuff that we're doing. And so, you know, the end product is probably going to be, again, a handful of these services for sports fans, especially, that you're going to have to pay to get this over here and that over there. And I know that's frustrating, but that's just going to how it has to be. The problem right now is you can't do that. Other than maybe something like YouTube TV, you can't just say, if I'm an NFL fan, what do I have to pay for? If I'm a Major League Baseball fan, what do I have to pay for? There's no answer to that right now. but there needs to be, and that's where they're going. So Fox is part of the missing piece here. I hope it makes some business sense for them. They find a way to do it with a product that people would be willing to pay for. And again, yeah, that's my pitch for Fox is be everywhere, right? Like, I don't think I can't conceive of them thinking like, we're going to build our own thing that's going to be like flagship. We're going to empire build here. It's that doesn't strike me as this is more like a really nice add on for somebody who wants this set of sports. So make it that. I don't know.
Yeah, I buy it.
So you came back from the Sloan Sports Conference. What struck you there? What did you see that was interesting?
I saw many interesting things, but I'll limit myself to two because I know we're tight on time. The first is that probably the biggest theme of this, and we talked about Pat McAfee, but even more niche, is athlete-created content. Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe had a great panel. They actually recorded a live podcast. There are a bunch of live podcasts. Podcasts have not peaked. A lot of people have said we're at peak podcast. I think we're at a transition time. I think you've got to be big. You've got to be Jason Snell big, or you shouldn't have a podcast.
Come on.
I mean, does the future CEO of Apple know you? So,
yeah, probably so, on site. It's probably not for my podcast, but you never know.
But athletes going direct, cutting out the middleman, saying what they want to say, building their own brands. You know, the problem is not everybody can do it. Not everybody's good at it. But the ones that are going to succeed, and the ones that aren't had better be really good at sports. You know, there were probably five or six podcasts that were, you know, live created at Sloan on stage, which I thought was interesting. All of them were video as well. And we're seeing more and more of this. I think podcast as just podcasts is almost going to be a problem for those hyper growth podcasts.
Yep, for sure.
The other that I found really, really interesting was, and again in the podcasting space, was there was a company called Sonar, and it's getsonar.fm, and brand new company, but they've created kind of the TikTok of podcasts. They probably wouldn't like me saying that, but it can find clips. And like, if you only want to hear Pat McAfee talk about, you know, the Green Bay Packers, which probably doesn't happen since he has Rodgers on all the time. But if you only want to hear about the Green Bay Packers, it will find clips from all these different shows, whether it's a Packers show, whether it's a national show, it will find clips and put them into a supercut. If you like Pat McAfee, but you don't care about the WWE, it'll clip it for you. And you can listen to this clip and that clip. And it's a little jarring. They're working on transitions, they said during their presentation. And it's only sports for right now, which I liked. But it's very easy to do this. I mean, it's AI and transcribing and all those cool buzzwords.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Really, I mean, really cool.
They're generating transcripts and then analyzing the segment content with a large language model, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like a podcast app. And this is how they get around the whole, like, are you pirating people's content? It's like, well, no, what they're doing is they're downloading those episodes selectively from the RSS feeds. They know what's in them. And then they build an interface to skip the content that you don't want or jump to the content you do. Technically, it's not quite, you know, ripping off that content. It's more like a curation and cultivation kind of thing.
Exactly.
Interesting.
That was one of the questions. There was a panel there, VCs questioning them. They're like, aren't they going to want you to listen to the whole show? And their answer was yes, but we're curating this. We're pulling content from somebody you may not have heard of.
You've heard
of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, if we talk about the Packers and it gets pulled up, you know, they might not know me or you, but it's one of those things where they think it's going to bubble up. If you hear somebody that has a great take on something, then they go into your feed beside McAfee and everybody else. So it was really interesting technology. It was funny because for years, my podcast app of choice has been Overcast. They do a great job with that. And that was specifically their competition. And I think it's solely because it's such a good design. Because it's obviously not sports focused, but Right. It was curious to have Overcast called out from the stage.
Oh, interesting. Marco would love to hear about that. That's really funny. It's, you know, I'm sure that they even pitch it as a podcast discovery, right? You're going to find a podcast that you like based on this algorithm, and then you can subscribe to listen to the whole thing. But we're going to sift through. I mean, you, in our show notes, you made a mention, talk about your niche sports interests. I am a fan of Cal. The Cal Bears content is pretty skimpy, but it occasionally happens. Pat McAfee came to Berkeley with College Game Day, for example, and he remembers stuff. So that'll come up. It was an NFL event. Ron Rivera was there, and he was like, roll on you Bears, Bear territory, because he knows that Ron Rivera is a Cal guy. And that would be one of those things where I'd be like, well, there are like some Cal podcasts, but not so many. But if I was like, well, just tell me what's going on. What are people talking about Cal? And it's like, well, they talked about it for 5 minutes here and nowhere else. But like, okay, it's like a clipping service. And yeah, if I listen to that podcast and go, oh, I kind of like these people. Mm-hmm. Then you could make that argument that it's discovery.
Yeah, they didn't ask about this, but obviously all the ad injectors are going to hate this thing.
Yeah, well, that was
especially
one of my thoughts.
They put in their own ads.
Well, especially then. I was thinking, like, if you do this, one of the things that you is dangerous is if you start to... you can hear all of Pat McAfee's podcasts, but we're going to remove the ads. It's like, then it feels a little more like you're hijacking their content. And if all you're picking is the content and the ads are never in it, again, it gets a little bit squishy then.
Then we're going to have to figure out how to get those ads into the content and talk about the Cal Bears sponsored by.
Sure. Gatorade for that deep down body thirst, as they used to say. The announcer at the stadium would emphasize body thirst, which I thought was the not what you're supposed to emphasize in that phrase, but
where else are you going
to
get the thirst
missed the days
from?
they sort of semi-professionalized the Cal game day experience now, and I kind of miss the days when all the messages came over a tannoy that looked like it was from MASH, and it was read by somebody who doesn't know how to pronounce words right, and it was just all amateurish. And at the time I was like, oh, this is so amateurish. Now I kind of miss it. I kind of miss before we had a big color video board and pre-rolls and ads on the field and stuff like that. But that's me being
being an ACC power.
Well, you know, the Cal women are going to be in the NCAA tournament. So I realized today, just before we were starting, I was looking at some headlines, and I realized that shockingly, my actual alma mater, UC San Diego, may make its first appearance in the Division I college basketball tournament. This is their first year that they're eligible. They won the Big West Conference. Mm-hmm. I think they still have to play in the Big West tournament, unfortunately, but they did win the conference.
Which gets you nothing.
And yeah, which means nothing because they're a single bid conference. But there's a chance that they might actually get into the big dance, and that would be hilarious. The Tritons of San Diego. Amazing.
Yeah, I was thinking Tritons.
They're one game up on the Irvine Anteaters in the final standings.
Because that's those Anteaters.
The Big West is full of those other University of California campuses that are like the...
Are the Banana Slugs in that one?
I don't think they are. The UC Santa Cruz's sports is not so strong, but the Gauchos of UC Santa Barbara are in there. The Gauchos. Hated Gauchos. All right, let's wrap up with some TV picks. This is where we like to actually talk about things that we're watching that we enjoy, so that you can maybe enjoy them too. Will, do you have a TV pick for me?
I do. Fear. I once again go British, but it's on Amazon Prime TV. Prime Video. Am I even supposed to say Amazon? I always do.
I think they want you to say Prime Video, but whatever. Or Prime. It's on Prime.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime Video. Sure.
So it's another British show. It's actually Scottish set. I think it's Glasgow, where it's one of the bad neighbor, new house. You move your family and something bad happens. You see it in horror movies and thrillers and everything else. Martin Compson's the star. If you watched Line of Duty illegally, I think there is a way to watch it legally now.
There is.
He's been in a lot of those shows, and he is great. It's one of those really quick binge shows, but I like those, and I wonder why can't we make shows like the Brits?
Yeah, I hear you. This is a British show, but actually made for Prime Video, which is fun. So it doesn't have to come around the horn from some broadcaster in the UK. Apple has had great success with this. Apple hired somebody from the BBC a few years ago, and they have cranked up their own kind of like British and European. That's where Slow Horses comes from, example, right? Which is a really great idea that it is a British production, but it's also just an Apple TV original. Well, this is cool. It is in Glasgow, and Fear. I hadn't even heard about this. This is pretty cool. It's pretty awesome. I am going to recommend, because I mentioned it earlier, I'm going to mention Shorzy again on Hulu. This is a Canadian show created by Jared Kiso. It is a spinoff of Letterkenny, which finished its run last year after like 13 mm-hmm. years of 6 episode seasons. They are very Canadian. But you don't need to have seen Letterkenny. You should probably try Letterkenny because I love it.
Yeah.
It's a great show, but Shorzy is self-contained. It is a character who's basically a running joke on Letterkenny and not a character. And mm-hmm. this show is like, but what if he was a character actually played by Jared Kiso? One of the reasons that Jared Kiso or Shorzy couldn't appear really in Letterkenny very much is because he's played by the same guy who is the lead on Letterkenny, except like he was usually in a men's room behind the door and talking in a high voice. And so, you know, that's how they got away with it. And then how do you do a show about that? And that's what I said. It's like, this is a one joke character. He just makes mom jokes. I saw your mom, you know, that's what your mom said while we were having sex last night. That is what Shorzy was. If they don't flesh him out, what I try to explain to people is, yes, it is profane. In all ways, in language ways, in sex ways, in lots of ways, but it is a sports comedy drama movie turned into a TV show, essentially, about a ragtag group of adult hockey players playing in an adult hockey league in Ontario. And it's sort of about that. And it's sort of about this guy coming to terms with the end of his hockey career, and hockey has defined him as a personality. But I should also say, like Letterkenny, it's kind of a sketch comedy show with recurring characters because, and it's very profane, but it's also incredibly smart. It's got very sexualized depictions of women, but is also incredibly feminist. It is all of the things at once, which is hard. I think it's not like anything other than Letterkenny that I've ever seen, but it's so smart and it's so verbal and it loves hockey and it loves hockey culture. And the first season I was a little bit baffled by why they were even doing it. And I got to the second season, I was like, oh my God, I actually love Shorzy. And they're in the fourth season is now out on Hulu. So
yeah, I could not recommend it more. This is one of the few shows that has gotten better as it goes along. It
really has. And I think as they impart more depth, and yeah, I mean, there's lots of broad humor as well, right? There's a lot of it, but there is an emotional core at the heart of it about loving hockey and about, I think, Shorzy and maybe even a proxy for Jared Kiso sort of saying, what do you do when you become middle-aged and you're not that ruffian anymore who just likes to, you know, punch it out on the ice and then, you know, go drinking with the boys. And it's like, well, what now for me in my life? And that is a thing that Shorzy has to reckon with too. And it's, you know, and it's like, but it is, it also has all the sports movie cliches. That's one of the things I love about it. They say, never lose again. We're never losing again. And like, how do you get it to your hockey team?
I don't think that's exactly how he said it, Jason.
Hmm?
I don't think that was the exact phrasing he used.
Well, I mean, we shortened it to never lose again because this is a family podcast. Anyway, don't watch this with your family. Watch this, just adults watch this show. But I couldn't recommend it higher. And
the thing about Jared Kiso, definitely watch Letterkenny. Definitely start at the start of Shorzy. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Especially that first season's a little, I want to say rough, but maybe you don't get it, especially if you haven't seen the character from Letterkenny. And I don't want to tell somebody to watch 15 seasons of Letterkenny. Before you get to Shorzy. You'll want to after you watch it. I hadn't realized Jared Kiso was also a serious actor. He has a like an action show where he's a policeman and won whatever the Emmy is in Canada for this episode where there was a school shooting. And I watched it and he was amazing. I mean, it was a very emotional show. It was very powerful. And you're seeing more of those chops, especially I haven't finished season 4 yet. So no spoilers. But he's showing the. I don't think he's going to be stuck with Shorzy for the rest of his life.
No. He's a. I mean, he went to L.A. The story behind Jerry Kiso. He went to L.A. and he was just super unhappy with the as a writer and an actor with the environment there. And the beauty of, I would say, Letterkenny and Shorzy is they're as close to a pure artistic vision as I think you're ever going to see in television. He's the writer. He's the star. He's often the director. He has a couple of partners, especially in Letterkenny, who also would write and direct with him. But it's a very clear, specific one or two people's vision of what the show should be. And that, I think, can only happen because it's in Canada with Canadian funding and a Canadian crew. And then it gets to us and the rest of the world via Hulu. But I think that small environment where the stakes are a little bit lower allows him to have that complete control. And honestly, anybody should give him that control because he has proven to be brilliant at making television. But I kind of love the fact that he tried the LA thing and then he went back to Canada and he was like, you know what, I can just make, and even though it is very Canadian specific, it doesn't matter. It's universal. It's a beautiful thing.
I hope Disney gives him some money and lets him do something a little bit bigger, a little bit broader.
Yeah. I mean, I would be, we were just talking about making streaming shows for Prime and Apple TV Plus in Britain. Like, and so many streaming shows get made in Canada anyway, but like, why not say, Jared Kiso, make your next project for Hulu everywhere, and you can shoot in Canada, and it can be about Canada, and we don't care. And Shorzy is, I mean, Shorzy, because it's connected to Letterkenny, is a Bell Media kind of outfit, but Hulu is putting in money. I think that already that was happening, where they're like, how do we get to be in the Jared Kiso business? Because he's so smart and so verbal. And Letterkenny, I describe to people as being, it's like Saturday Night Live. If the actors on Saturday Night Live played the same people every week, but there were still bits and running gags and sketches and recurring characters all, but because it has that real vibe of, we're just going to make a bunch of jokes here. And I love it. And they're funny jokes. Okay. Shorzy on Hulu, Fear on Prime for some Scottish mystery and intrigue, psychological thrills. That brings us to the end of this episode. If you haven't yet, please do consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. This was a full-sized episode for all, but the only way to hear the complete version of our last episode and our next episode and hear everything ad-free as well is to subscribe. You can do that at downstream.plus to subscribe and support the show. You can find me at sixcolors.com. I appear at many other podcasts at Relay and over at theincomparable.com. Will, where can people find you and what you do?
Well, with the baseball season getting underway, people are falling mightily, especially Yankees, losing both Stanton and Cole for the season. That's a little breaking news for you. You can read about all those injuries and more at undertheknife.substack.com. I don't have millions of subscribers like Nate Silver, who I got to see my old friend at Sloan. His numbers are ridiculous. So I would like to get, a few thousand subscribers. So if you like baseball and you like reading about injuries, I invite you over to.
If you like baseball, if you play fantasy baseball, if you want to read about, I love it. You have very kindly comped me a subscription to this. I love reading about it and I don't play fantasy baseball anymore. It's really nice to get your opinion about it. Because, it's that thing. It was like, he's going to rub some dirt on it and he'll be back later. And then Will's like, okay, let me tell you the specifics of this injury and how the comps all responded to it. And the surgeon that I talked to said, it's like, just way more than you're going to get from your local sports columnist saying, you should have put some more oomph into it. It's like, no, that's not how that works with the knee. When the knee does that, that's not what happens. Well, Will, it's always a pleasure to have you here. Oh, intangible.co, we should mention. That's another thing that you're doing.
Yeah, we can tell you who is clutch. So we rolled out even bigger at Sloan, presented. We did not win. A virtual concussion clinics won the big prize for the startups. The name was Headquarters. Brilliant company. I don't mind losing to somebody doing something as cool as that. So check out Headquarters if you have a concussion. Well, that's a terrible ad.
Wow. That's why you're at Intangible. That's NTANGIBLE.co. I'll put a link in the show notes too. And usually we do this about once a month, so I hope to talk to you again in April.
Always an honor, sir.
Yeah, and thanks to everybody out there for listening to this episode of Downstream. Sorry we were a little bit late. We'll be a little bit early next time, I guess, if you really think about it, because we'll be back on our regular schedule. We'll see you then. Bye.